Aaron. It's 6 past the hour on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Welcome aboard. I'm back. It's good to be back. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
I was in Seattle. We had a great time.
Good turnout?
It was a great turnout. And you know what, dude? People drove up from Portland. Fans of the show drove 3 hours.
From Portland, Oregon?
3 hours to come see me in Seattle. A lot of fans of the show, a lot of bakers staying up all night listening to us. It was just great to get out and see, like, you know, regular people and talk to them and see how excited they were about the show as opposed to just, you know, having the small world of, you know, emails and blog snots, you know, telling me, you know, what's right and what's wrong and, you know, who's listening and who they think is listening. It was just, it was great. Great tapings. We had a great time. One show, Mark Arm from Mudhoney, the band who's, we play a lot of their music on the show.
Okay.
One of my favorite sort of more recent rock and roll bands. He came down.
They're
a Seattle band. That was kind of cool meeting him. My wife, Misha Wolf, did some brilliant shows.
Oh, she worked with you.
Yeah. The cat who owns the club is a trip. You know, this guy, Terry. This was an awkward moment that, you know, I'd heard about this, but I'd not seen it myself. Where after the weekend, after I did 4 shows, I did like an hour and 45 minutes on Friday night, on second show
Friday
night.
Yeah, you told me that, man. That's an incredible amount of time.
That was like a marathon, you know, get it all out.
That's like a movie.
It was funny, this cat Rory came up from Portland, one of the guys, and he was sitting stage left with his Jesus Was a Liberal t-shirt on. And then some woman up front was with a guy named Jesse. They came up from Portland, and I met them after the show, and I'm in the middle of my set, and all of a sudden, I didn't know who they were, you know, because I didn't talk to them after the show. I'm in the middle of the set. She just looks up, and she goes, "What about the cats?" What's going on with the cats? I do a lot about the cats, as you know. But what was I talking about? Oh, the owner of the club, Terry, says, "You want to see it?" And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's a little creepy. He goes, "Come upstairs." And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't know. That makes me uncomfortable." But I heard about this dude. He takes me upstairs. His apartment is on top of the club. And he has an entire room dedicated to his collection of Star Wars paraphernalia. Entire room. But no, it looks like a store, dude. Nothing is out of the wrapper. Everything's hanging up on little, like, racks, like store racks. Hundreds. Dolls, you know, action figures, all this stuff. You know, and it's one of those moments where, you know, what do you say other than, like, wow. Yeah. You've got to.
You cross the threshold of the door, the theme blasts through speakers and stuff.
But it's just sort of like, you have a problem. This is not a hobby. You have some sort of problem. And, but, you know, I stayed at my in-law's house. I like staying at the hippie house up there at Diane and Ira. We got a bed up in the attic. There's nothing more peaceful than sleeping in an attic in the Pacific Northwest. Can I just say that? There's a window right here. They live on an acre or so. Her mother does a lot of gardening. It's just really peaceful. I'd love to settle in the Pacific Northwest someday.
Did you make it to Pike?
Oh, of course, man. Went to Pike Street's Market. Had the, I went to Pike Market. I think it's just called Pike Market.
Yeah.
I had the scallops and the cioppino that I enjoyed so much. We did a lot of stuff, man. We, you know, I mean, as much as I could do in 2 days, but most of it was, you know, consumed with preparing for the show.
Mm.
But the other thing about Seattle is you can't. The coffee situation is out of hand. it's out of hand everywhere, Riley. But I mean, you go to Seattle, dude, and it's like, you know, Starbucks is bad because they're part of the problem. They're the corporate entity that ruined coffee.
Mm-hmm.
But you can go to
it very expensive.
You can go to the original Starbucks, the first one. But you know, that's not. But now mom and pop coffee shops, they're taking a backseat to these coffee shacks that are in parking lots of supermarkets. They're just like the size of closets. They look like outhouses. Almost, but they're espresso shacks. So now, like, you can't even go to the mom and pop stores because people are like, "Have you been to that? Have you been to that coffee shack in the parking lot of the Skyway Market in, you know, in Renton?" I'm like, "No." It's like you got to go between 11 and 2 when Joe's there, because if Joe doesn't make it, so now it's just like drugs. It's actually come full circle, and you have to seek out the one guy in the parking lot of the one place that does the one thing right with the coffee that'll get you high.
Wow.
And now, like, now there's a I know we got big news to deal with, but man, and we got Barry Lynn's going to be here, and that's going to be great.
Yes.
He is the executive director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. The Reverend Barry Lynn will be with us all morning. After this.
We're going to straighten out this religious thing.
We are going to try and straighten it out, hammer it out.
No, we're going to straighten it out. We're not going to try to straighten it. We're going to straighten it out.
There
you go.
Couple of stories that have a personal effect on me. First, the primary story, and then we'll get into the stories that have an effect on the country, is that apparently there's some Splenda shortages on the horizon.
A problem with Splenda.
Yes, small U.S. makers of foods and drinks sweetened with Splenda are making contingency plans as big food companies get the lion's share of the popular sugar substitute. Now, I'm not a big food company. But I am clearly going. I have Splenda in my pockets at all times. It's really sad. I'll pull out a pad of paper. 4 Splenda packets will fall out. And it used to be that way with Blow for me, but now it's Splenda, which I think is better. But I got to be honest with you. This weird withdrawal I have is that I've actually, doing 2 lines of Splenda and a line of Sweetenlow, and then taking an espresso shot has got to stop. Because I'm calling it a sweet ball. So if anybody wants to try it, it'll really it'll make your head all crystally and sweet. But apparently there's going to be a Splenda shortage, so...
Until 2006!
Oh, man, how much do I have to buy? You know what I do? Is just go to Starbucks and, pocket as much as I can. Is that wrong? I mean, I will use it in coffee in the future, is that wrong?
I don't know. Well, we can ask Barry Lynn. If there's any ethical problem. Look, they put it out there for people to use. I mean, if you don't take it, somebody else will. It's not like you got to leave a dime inside a cup or something.
But it's sort of like that thing about going into a place to use the restroom and they say it's only for customers. Well, I ate here 3 weeks ago. Doesn't that count? It's the same thing as if you drink coffee at Starbucks or wherever you're drinking coffee and they have Splenda, is it a crime to steal some for later?
In other words, ethically, when you use them in non-Starbucks products.
Do I have to write that guy at the New York Times Magazine to get to the answer to this?
No.
So let's see what's going on with the neocon death cult's, newest, theft of the election. Perhaps there's a new round of challenges in the Ohio vote. Yeah, Riley?
Well, today is the day that Ohio Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell is certifying the final election results. Now, you may remember, Mark, that right after the election, the margin George Bush had over John Kerry was about 136,000. That's what we were told.
Can I just say, though, there are still black people online to vote in Ohio.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
They're promising them like 7:30.
Okay.
But it's down to 119,000. Apparently, when they finished doing all the provisional ballots and the absentees, they apparently validated a pretty high percentage, somewhere on the order of 75% to 80% of the provisionals did get through.
Uh-huh.
So the margin is lower, but Bush is still the winner. However, lawyers are still talking about contesting these results with the Ohio Supreme Court, saying that there are documented cases of long lines, as you just mentioned, shortage of machines, and a pattern of problems in, guess where? Predominantly black neighborhoods.
Well, yeah, one voting machine that doesn't even have a paper trail for the entire black population of Ohio, I think, was wrong.
Yeah, that might have been a problem. But the Secretary of State Blackwell is, in fact, black.
Yeah.
And doing very well, apparently.
But is he on the team, though, Riley?
Oh, yeah, he's on the Bush-Cheney team. Yeah. And that's a very big issue. How do you serve as Secretary of State presiding over an election while you also serve as campaign chair, state campaign chair, for the Bush-Cheney campaign? How do you do that?
It's wrong.
It's twisted.
It's sort of like that cat, it just all left me. Whatever I was going to say.
It is at the very least problematic.
The guy who was Secretary of State in Missouri who ran for governor, his father is, in the Congress. Am I stupid?
Oh.
Why'd I bring it up?
I forgot the guy's name, too. But no, it is a clear conflict of interest. There is a problem when you claim to represent the people of the state of Ohio. In terms of this electoral process, you are certifying the results of the election, yet you also work for one of the people who's contesting the election. That's absurd.
There's a lot of problems, and hopefully if they do draw this lawsuit and that everything, the best that can come out of it is we will successfully have some election reform, certainly for the 2006 and hopefully 2008 elections.
The only thing that's going to make a difference here, I believe, is some form of either federal oversight.
That's the guy's name, Blunt.
Oh, Blunt. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. There's got to be some form of federal oversight. Now, federal oversight has its dangers as well, because an incumbent president could use federal oversight the same way some of these people do on the state level.
Mm-hmm.
But there's got to be some uniformity in the way these things are done. It's absurd that here in New York we're using 40-year-old voting machines, and out in Ohio they're using these machines, these Diebold machines, that don't leave a paper trail. Every state, every election district has some different way. In Ohio, some places, people came right in and voted like they were going to the supermarket. Didn't have to wait in the line. As you point out, in 7:30, black people will probably have a chance to vote in Columbus. And they had a big rally about this in Columbus over the weekend. Published reports say it was 400 people.
Which means that somebody will call us. If you were at the rally, give us a call and tell us that there was 9,000 people there.
That's right.
They're just saying 400. If only Kerry had had the nads of Viktor Yushchenko, we could have,
exactly.
We could have really gotten
Ukraine,
some momentum.
The courts threw out the result of the
election. That's right. We'll be back in a second with Barry Lynn, and we're going to talk about Christianity.
Yes.
17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Mark Maron and Mark Riley. Because two Marks are better than one. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
That's great intro music for the Reverend.
We got to play Highway to Hell by AC/DC.
Our guest in studio here is the Reverend Barry Lynn. Lynn is Executive Director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. Welcome, my friend. Nice
to
see
you. It's very nice to be here.
Good morning. To you on the phone, and here you are in the flesh.
Absolutely.
You're hanging out. Before we launch into Christianity, I want to tell Mark Riley.
Where?
You're right there, buddy. And by the way, you're all listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. We just got an email. Thanks, Mark, for taking the CD to Mark, which I haven't even given him yet. I was going to surprise him. You did a great set of giggles on Friday, the 10 p.m. show. You rocked. Oh, and your wife was very cute in her stand-up set, too. It was great having you here in Seattle. Please keep coming back. We'll see you every time. Hi, Mark Riley. Hope you enjoy the CD. This is from 1976, American International in Butler, PA.
A drum corps CD?
A drum corps CD from Kathy in Seattle.
Oh, Kathy. Oh, Kathy Dozer, thank you so much, Kathy. Oh, wow, the Anaheim Kingsmen. And that's funny because I actually have a 1972 version of the Anaheim Kingsmen.
Wow, now it's kidding. Esoteric drum corps lore.
Yes. And Kathy Dozer, oh, she's a screenwriter, too. Fantastic. Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, very nice.
If you're up.
Is this like Grateful Dead tapings?
Yeah, it is, sort of.
There's a whole network around this drum corps thing. I don't know anything about it.
No.
We're going to have to put some of that in the tease music now.
Hey, wait a minute. You can. I got plenty. Oh, some of this?
Yeah, give it to Kayla right now.
He'll put out Anaheim, though. They're the best ones on there. But no, you know what's really funny about this?
Yeah.
A lot of the places where we have affiliates, like in Madison, Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and Columbus, Ohio, they all have drum corps. They come out of those cities. Madison, Wisconsin has the Madison Scouts. Columbus has a corps called the Capital Regiment. Seattle has a corps called the Seattle Cascades. So there are all of these corps that are in all of these places where we are. It's amazing.
Wow, the secret world of Riley never ceases to amaze me.
I started doing drum corps when I was 8.
Wow.
Okay, my mother was looking for something. We had just moved to Connecticut. She was looking for something for me to do, and she took me to a place where I was taught by one of the greatest drum instructors who ever lived.
Oh.
A guy by the name of Earl Sturtz. He was an amazing man, absolutely amazing. He used to drum at silent movies. That's how long ago. Anyway, enough of that.
When the boulders were coming down right off the roof.
There you go.
So, Barry Lynn, you say you've got an answer for us on my transgression in terms of stealing artificial sweetener from places of business that sell products that you can use the artificial sweetener in, even if you're a customer of that place. Am I doing something wrong on an ethical level?
Well, here's the answer that I would give. You know, not only am I a minister, in which case I can, of course, forgive you, even if it is wrong to do that.
Make him do penance, though.
Absolutely. But then also, I'm an attorney, and if somebody comes out and says, you know, he did do something wrong, I'm willing to defend you. So either way, and I do appreciate being here because, you know, Al Sharpton was here, of course, on Friday.
Yes.
And, of course, I'm a reverend myself and here today. And this is kind of a little plot on the part of the religious left. We're trying to kind of inveigle our way into morning drive shows. And then what we do, Al and I and Jesse Jackson sit down every alternate Thursday. And I'll say, now where can we go on a morning drive show and convert these guys secretly?
So these guys,
it's all a big pun.
The right puts millions of dollars into think tanks and movements and talking points. We got Anna,
we got
Sharpton,
Barry Lynn, and Al Sharpton, Jackson, and Jackson.
Meet up with Coffee once a week. So, Reverend Barry, let me ask you this. The FCC and the Family Values Crusaders are, I think, you know, their numbers. I want to talk first about the numbers and see if we can start, you know, dismantling the sort of fascistic threat of a certain type of Christianity in this country. After the FCC cited 159 public complaints in its legal case against Fox for the show Married by America, a Freedom of Information request showed that there were actually only 90 complaints written by 23 individuals. Of those 23, all but two were identical repetitions of a form letter posted by the Parents Television Council. In other words, the total of actual distinct complaints about Married by America was 3.
Yep.
Now, I'm very aware, you know, I know that there is a real threat, but I also know that there's a tremendous propaganda momentum coming out of this particular religious section of America. Now, what is the real threat? How many are there, and what do they want?
Well, I'll tell you, there probably are about 17 to 18% of voters who regularly self-identify as being either members of the religious right or conservative evangelicals. That means with a conservative political agenda as well as a religious one. So it is a large number. But when it comes to these kinds of scams where they claim they're getting tens of thousands of people to write in, often that turns out to be just as phony as the FCC determined. For example, the Christian Coalition used to say it had millions of members, and those millions of members were supposed to, for many years, get a magazine called Christian American. So what we used to do is every year go down to the Postal Service, look at their postal mailing permit to find out whether they were mailing millions of their members this magazine, because you got it for giving them anything at all. We'd find 200,000, 300,000. In other words, an overrepresentation by about 80%. Having said that, there's still a menace. Anytime you got a group of people that's 17% of the American electorate, that's bigger than any labor union, and that is certainly a formidable group to contend with.
But is that group, now see, the ideologues of this group, that the people that are putting out the talking points for sort of like what I think is this, a Christo-fascist movement, are still a minority of that percentage. And the rest of them are probably not on as dedicated as the people that are guilting them into thinking.
Yeah, they're not quite as hardcore, but I gotta tell you, as I go around the country, which I do a lot, I meet a lot of these people. I talk to a lot of these people on radio and television shows, and the truth is there are a lot of them.
Okay.
I think we don't want to discount them either.
No, I'm not discounting them. I'm just trying to see the truth. We'll be back in a second with Barry Lynn.
And there's somebody in the lobby called Frank.
All right, well,
okay,
sure
we'll find out what he... I think he may be here with the presidential palm pilot.
Or somebody's palm pilot.
And the liberal agenda is up next as well when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Morning Sedition. You're listening to Air America Radio. Our guest in studio for the entire morning, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, the Reverend Barry Lynn. Right now, this guy Frank, who I don't even know who that guy was.
I don't know who he was.
He was wearing military fatigues. Dropped us Donald Rumsfeld's palm pilot for today. Here's Rumsfeld's schedule. 6 a.m., wake up, stay in bed until Bush calls and begs me to get up. Then get up very slowly. 7 a.m., look at Ready Reserve list. See if there are any World War I vets just sitting around. 8 a.m., breakfast. Note, that reminds me. Find out if Captain Crunch is ready for active duty. 10 a.m., arrive at office. Note, when receptionist asks how I am, when receptionist asks how I am, give 4 minute response using nothing but adverbs. That way, and then act like it made perfect sense. 1 p.m., design special Pat Tillman combat medal for bravery under fire from your own troops.
Oh.
6 p.m., look into possibility of a backdoor draft of members of Salvation and or KISS armies. There are at least 150,000 right there. So, Barry Lynn, we were talking before about the actual size of the Christo-fascist movement within this country, the movement that want to dissolve the separation between church and state for its own agenda and impose their morality on the country, whether we like it or not. And the reason I was investigating that with you is not to minimize the threat, but to understand that, you know, a lot of this is a massive propaganda campaign to put people who are progressive or just good Americans who are believe in democracy on the defensive. So we get into this position where all we can, you know, fight for is, you know, First Amendment issues and abortion and gay rights, which are important, but it makes us, you know, it's hard to just sit there and go, wait, why can't we have porn? And abortion should be legal. And there's nothing wrong with gay people. You know, I mean, they are guiding the dialogue through the propaganda.
Of course they are. Of course they are. And one of the problems is we never put them on the defensive, no matter how ridiculous some of the things are that they stand for. These are true stories. It's two brief stories. Number one,
time.
The American Family Association, run by the Reverend Don Wildman, the second famous person from Tupelo, Mississippi.
After Elvis.
Yeah, if you didn't know that before, I would just assume it's because it was too early in the morning. But anyway, Reverend Don Wildman's group came out a few weeks ago against the movie Shark Tale.
Right.
He said Shark Tale has a character in it named Lenny. It's a shark that doesn't eat meat. He said this is a subtle way to teach kids it's okay to be different, as in be a homosexual.
What is that?
Say that again.
Okay. Lenny is a character in Shark Tale, this animated film for children. But Lenny doesn't eat meat. He doesn't want to be a traditional shark. He's a vegetarian shark. So this is read by the American Family Association as a subtle message to children that says, children, you can be different. And then from there, they catapult into their next conclusion, which is that it's a subtle message to say, it's okay to be gay. Now, this is a follow-up to an equally ridiculous complaint this summer by the Traditional Values Coalition that warned people not to take their children to see Shrek 2. Why
not? I heard about that.
Why wouldn't you see it? Well, because it promotes cross-dressing. Now, here's how it does that. Of course, there's a grandmother from the Little Red Riding Hood story who's shown not once but twice wearing a flannel nightgown. A guy wolf wearing a woman's flannel nightgown. Can you imagine what would have happened if that wolf had been decked out by Victoria's Secret? Can you imagine that? No, and then the second thing, of course, in the movie, there's a Pinocchio character, and the donkey with Eddie Murphy's voice says, you've got to lie, Pinocchio. We need your nose to grow. Say something that's a lie. Say you're wearing women's underwear. And Pinocchio says, I'm wearing women's underwear. But his nose remains the same. See, a subtle message is okay to wear. Now, why is it that the mainstream press, outside of a couple of blogs, don't even mention that those are the absurd positions that you get to if you buy into the assumptions of the religious right.
But I feel bad for the kids. I mean, the kids wouldn't even think about it.
Of course they wouldn't.
It's a subliminal message, isn't it? I mean, and you know, Little Red Riding Hood has been a story forever.
Of course.
And also, what frightens me is how this also plays into the conservative ideology, especially around the meat issue. Not just, it's not a gay issue, but it does play into the meat lobbies.
Of course, it does.
They want people to eat meat. That somehow represents America.
Absolutely.
Represents Republican interests. So how much of that are they aware of?
Oh, they're aware of quite a bit of that, because some of the same people that are involved in religious right, so-called moral issues, are, of course, the same people like Ralph Reed, who used to run the Christian Coalition. He's now involved in getting money to gambling interests around the country. Talk about that. I mean, so, these are guys who are pure as the driven snow only when necessary. Otherwise, they'll do anything, just like so many other folks, to make money with the Bush administration or their friends therein.
Reverend Barry Lynn, what do you think their end game is? What kind of world do they want to structure? Maybe we should get one of them in here to ask them. But I really want to know.
Did you ever hear of the Taliban?
Yeah.
No,
they hung people from soccer goalposts, for God's sake.
These guys are not going to hang you from a soccer goalpost.
But they will ostracize you from society.
They will make you feel like such a second-class citizen that you know you don't belong in any of the institutions. You don't belong in their churches, their schools, or anything else. And I used to think it was a little bit of a stretch to suggest that there is an American-like Taliban. But I think if you look at the whole agenda of Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson, James Dobson, and a lot of their cohorts around the country, that's exactly where you end up. They tell you what to think, they tell you what to read, what music you can listen to, what religious practices are acceptable to them. They want to run your life, my life, and everyone's life, and they've given up on moral persuasion. Now they want to go to the Congress, now they want to go to the state legislatures and enforce their morality.
There already are. There are people infiltrating state legislatures, there are congressmen, there are senators that go to prayer breakfast every day.
Oh, absolutely.
itself is not necessarily bad on some level, but on another level, their constituents, their people that put them in, have expectations. See, and that's what I wonder, is that I believe that, you know, that true Republicans actually believe in evolution. They believe that the poor will adapt to whatever they put them through. Now, I believe that also, I don't know what this weird alliance is going to yield, that, you know, eventually, because as you said, the public face of some of these ministers, if they are that, which, you know, they claim to be, they will not, there's people within, like this woman who cut her kid's arms off the other day, was part of a church of a guy that, you know, that the most, what's his name right here? His name's Davidson. It's the Water of Life Ministries in suburban Dallas, all right? And this is a guy that tells his ministry to, you know, subjugate their women, that their women are second-class citizens who, you know, who are stupider than their men. He was actually arrested for trying to exorcise a woman by strangling her when their husband let him do that. And this woman who cut her arms, the kid's arms off, was obviously delusional, but was also somebody who was a messenger for this church. And these kind of pastors exist, and they're not allowed into the public spectrum.
No.
But they are allowed in by, they are not discouraged.
No, they're not. In fact, you're onto something very important, because on the one hand, we want to expose this, the craziness that you see. I mean, the kind of people who would in other cultures be considered the village idiot, not a person who is allowed to be on national television on a regular basis. On the other hand, we also have to recognize that people like Pat Robertson and now Jerry Falwell, as if we needed another right-wing institution, is starting a right-wing law school down in Lynchburg, Virginia. His goal, and he might say that if he were sitting here, is to find people to go to his law school and then infiltrate the legislatures, get elected, not necessarily by saying, oh, by the way, I went to Liberty University, which is Falwell's university, but to make sure that judges are also in the near future graduates of his university and Regent University Law School that Pat Robertson runs, because he wants to take over, he said this, the media, politics, and the courts.
Well, they're already trying to bully the media, clearly. You know, the FCC is buckling to these freaks. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, if anybody thought the media was liberal, the general media was liberal, just note that NBC, CBS, and ABC all refused last week to air an ad from the United Church of Christ, which happens to be the church in which I am a minister, that simply said, come to our church. We let anybody in. We let in minorities. We let in gay people and elderly people. And three networks said, we won't air it. It's too controversial. CBS said, in light of the president's opposition to gay marriage, which wasn't even the subject of the advertisement.
Are these folks, in your judgment, prepared to impose their will despite the fact that they are a minority in this country? They don't represent, and many of their views, if not most of their views, do not represent mainstream thought. Are they really prepared to say to the rest of the country, we are going to tell you how to live your life?
They are not only willing to tell you, but if you don't listen to them well enough, they are willing to have legislatures impose that view. That's why they go to the FCC and decide what pressure campaigns are going to orchestrate to make sure that you won't see the things that you want to see. And of course they're out of the mainstream. Do you think that Desperate Housewives is only watched by people in San Francisco and New York City? In fact, no, it's not. And in fact, it's got better ratings in places like Omaha, Nebraska. That's because people don't see it as the threat to American life that a couple of extremists on the religious right do.
And the real frightening thing is, and we'll, you know, if you want to have any questions for Barry Lynn, our number is 866-303-2270. I would like to hear from people who have, who feel this force in their community, who feel bullied by the religious right in its extreme, wherever you are. Because as I've said many times on this show, most of America does not believe the way these people believe. And those numbers are real. And the one thing that I fear of is that the same type of congregations that this woman came from. Now, I'm not suggesting that this pastor or this minister had anything to do with her cutting her kid's arms off. But he certainly was feeding on her delusional nature, as they do. Now, these are people where you have a flock or a congregation, if they are of a certain ilk, they will. You can convince them not to believe the truth and see everything as some sort of liberal or Jewish or whatever kind of conspiracy, to where they have no barometer of reality. Now, my concern is with this momentum you're talking about, where you have people entering the legislature and people who are going to law schools that are Christian-oriented, that they may be doing it through their legislature, but are they going to allow those people to act in extreme ways in terms of violence or in terms of
actually, you know, taking action that is what you would identify as guerrilla fascist tactics. Would that happen? I just read Philip Roth's new book, The Plot Against America, where that sort of is allowed to unfold.
I think we're looking at theocracy light here.
Okay.
I think that's what, now the violence, of course, is real. When you have somebody like the Christian Coalition, which for many years would have these annual meetings, have a bookstore, and sell a book called Legislating Immorality by a man named Dr. George Grant, and George Grant calls for the execution of gay people in America. And then there's a footnote that says, oh, by the way, in our judicial system, you have to give these people a trial first. But what we know, and what we still know, in spite of ABC, about Matthew Shepard, and what we know about Brandon Tina, is that some people do not read the footnotes. They go out and commit acts of violence, and you can't say, my hands are clean, I did nothing, if you're going to distribute a book like Legislating Immorality, this virulent anti-gay book by George Grant, out of the back of your bookstore. You can't wash your hands of the consequences.
Right. 866-303-2270. It's 46 past the hour. Barry Lynn is our guest. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition.
We can't do it without you. Call us at 866-303-2270.
That's 866-303-2270.
Right here on Air America Radio.
That's it. 52 past the hour. Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes,
you're
it
listening
is
to Morning Sedition, and that is Mudhoney. Mudhoney's Mark Arm came to see me perform at Giggles the other night, and we hung out afterwards. It was pretty cool. Barry Lynn is our guest in the studio. He is the executive director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. You were talking about biblical literalism, which I want to make note that we get to in the next hour, because you said something very interesting about that, but people are just going to have to wait. Right now, Aaron in Staten Island, what do you got for Barry?
Hey, Aaron.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
All right, how you doing?
Good. My question is really, and I don't mean to make a slippery slope insinuation here, but
it's okay. We got skis.
Yeah, right.
At what point do we really, you know, write off a lot of these extremists as a zealot on the scale of David Koresh or Jim Jones? I mean, it seems to me a lot of them have passed that point.
Okay, well, thanks for that. That's a good question. I think you know, there's certainly enough meat in it just the way it is, Aaron. Thanks for calling. Barry?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we can't write them off until they stop voting. You know, that's the problem. The people who have not yet gone off and decided that they're going to drink Kool-Aid or tell others to do the same are the people who are organizing and making a difference. This, as I said the last time we chatted, this was not a morals value election. This was, that was, whole thing has been debunked now. This is not a morals values election. On the other hand, there are certainly individual places in certain states where the religious right did tremendous organizing, and they got people out to the polls who might not have come out otherwise. We've got to find ways to combat them. We're not in the business of tripping them on the way to the polling place. That's what they do to us. We're interested in making sure we have more of us progressives,
and also,
next time around.
Koresh and Jones were sort of dead set on themselves being the Messiah, so their weird sort of narcissism, you know, in how they use their congregations was a little different. They were more about satisfying their own strange ego than they were about mobilizing votes.
You know, that's true. On the other hand, what is it when you have somebody like the President of the United States, George Bush, talking to Bob Woodward for that latest book of Bob's and saying that he feels that he is a messenger of God when he brings freedom around the world?
No, a messenger of God.
That sounds a little bit Koresh.
He's definitely a messianic freak show, the president is. And, you know, that's why Koresh and people like Jim Jones, as threatening as they are to you know, the people that are involved in their congregations, I mean, there was actually stories that Jim Jones was some sort of renegade CIA operative who was being used to try out mind control experiments and just went nuts and took people to Guyana, and that's what happened. But he supposedly had, you know, deep military connections and was being used.
You know, there's something that comes out of us. Mark, you remember when we read that article from that guy, Tony Perkins. I can't remember the name of his organization.
Maybe Family Research Council.
The Family Research Council. You remember when we read that article back before, I guess it was around September, when he said that his constituents, however many of them there are, cared more about the gay rights issue than they cared about the economy. Remember how absurd we thought that was?
Mm. Well, that's a lot with all of them. That's Thomas Frank's argument, is that somehow or another, because of religion, these people are able to overlook the fact that they are victims of Republican policies that keep them in, you know, in economically compromised.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask Barry about it, because it seems like he may have been at least a little bit right.
Well, he's right about his own constituents.
Yeah, exactly.
What a statement for the country. But I got to tell you, on a major television network, which I'll mention if you ask, I was called by
which
a producer.
Which one was it?
That would be the Fox News Channel. I was asked during the Clinton, remember the little Clinton in the Oval Office matter?
Yeah.
Guy calls me up, a producer, and says, would you be willing to come on to the network and talk about this question? Is America morally downhill? And I said, well, what do you want to talk about? Do you want to talk about oral sex in the White House, or do you want to talk about hungry children? And I swear this is what he said. He said, hungry children? You think that is a moral issue? No. And I said, yes, and why don't you go tell your boss that that's what I said, and then call me back in 10 minutes if you'd like me on anyway. To his credit, he did say, yeah, why don't you come over? It would be an interesting new perspective. No, it shouldn't be an interesting new perspective. Morality ought to be how many children are going to bed hungry in the wealthiest nation ever to exist on planet Earth. But don't tell that to Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson, because they're too busy bashing gays, stopping reproductive choice, and telling you not to look at desperate housewives.
Let's just take one quick call to maybe set up our next hour. Ann in New York, how are you?
Hi, Ann.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good. What's your question?
Ann. Well, you see, I'm sitting here listening to this as I'm driving to work, and I'm getting so annoyed, and I'm saying, what can we do? What can I do to let the mainstream world know what's going on? Because the only ones talking about this is you guys.
Okay, well, that's a great question, Ann, and thanks for your call. And we're going to talk about all of that, what we can do and what is practical for people who are concerned about this can do in the next hour. Right now, there is the facts from the Streisand compound with our liberal agenda for today. Let's take a look at it. Write these down, folks. One, send Barry Bonds and Jason Giambi.
Giambi.
Giambi, information about herbal alternatives that can also shrink your testicles. Two, if this medical marijuana thing, if this medical marijuana thing flies, start pushing for medical ecstasy. Imagine the suffering we could relieve with that. Three, protest movie The Incredible as damaging to children with low self-esteem. Suggest name change to The Nicely Adequate. Four, since the publication of his memoirs and his appearance on 60 Minutes last night, criticize Bob Dylan for being a media whore. Five, today's phrase is drop it into conversation. You know why Rumsfeld's staying, don't you? Because Bush's cabinet is dangerously close to hitting the white guy minimum. Wake up, man. Wake up. Barry Lynn's going to be back with us.
Yeah, Barry Lynn's going to be back, and we've got the Dream Diary, Planet Bush, and more here on Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, you're listening to Air America Radio at 6 past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, right-wing Christians. Good morning to you if you're listening, sitting at home seething at our guest, the Reverend Barry Lynn. Good morning, Mark Riley.
Good morning, Mark Maron.
Some announcements. I first want to thank all those people that drove up from Portland to Seattle 3 hours to see me perform up there in Seattle. Big fans of the show, Riley. Someone brought you a CD, a drum corps CD.
That's
very
right.
Nice. We had bakers and, you know, all kinds of people. I just say bakers because people who listen to us in Seattle have got to be up real late because we're on at 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
And one woman wanted to stay for both shows. She only stayed for one. A pharmacist who's up late. I didn't question why. A baker. A woman who's a baker that came up to me. And Rory, this cat from Portland, came. It was just great to meet the folks that enjoy the show. Right now, I'd like to talk about this Friday. This Friday, we're Morning Sedition is going to be traveling up to Boston. That's December 10th. We're going to have a live broadcast from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville. Our guests will include Congressman Barney Frank in the flesh, coming down to hang out. Comedian Jimmy Tingle. Barry Crimmins, I think, also going to come down and hang out. Some of you know him from Randy's show. Jimmy goes way back. Great comedian. And I'm doing a show with the two of them Friday night at the Off-Broadway Theater, which is Tingle's theater right there in Davis Square. It's a Ding Ho 25th reunion show. The Ding Ho is a Chinese restaurant in Somerville where they used to have a comedy night, or several of them during the week. Stephen Wright was found there. Everybody used to work there, and I can't believe it's been gone for that long. But I did some of my first open mics there when I was in college. Also, Ted Leo is going to be up. Ted Leo rocks. Kicks arse, that guy. I worked with him at the South Pond in Brooklyn for that Carrie benefit. Okay. And the dude comes out with an electric guitar, covers Rush's Today's Tom Sawyer by himself, full-on intensity, pulls it off. That's
right.
No easy thing. Let's see, what else we got? I already said that. Yep. Oh, I'll be in Hoboken this Saturday night, appearing with YOLO Tango and 11th Dream Day at Maxwell's.
At the world-famous Maxwell's. Everybody knows about Maxwell's. But Maxwell's is one of those Hoboken places that, you know, has gotten itself a national rep.
Yeah, if you want to blog, come. You can be a happy blogger, you can be a blog snot, it's up to you. I'm no longer the blog bitch, so it doesn't make any difference to me. But Larson, Klutz Larson, is on top of the pulse of the blog. Our emails are, we can't seem to access emails today for whatever reason. They've changed things on us, and we all have to learn what to do now. But we will respond to blogs that Larson thinks are worthy of responding to.
Yeah.
Now, I guess what we should do is get right. I want to also say I read Philip Roth's new book, The Plot Against America, which is about the conceit of the book. Is that the way you say it? Is that Charles Lindbergh defeats Franklin Delano Roosevelt in his presidential election in attempt for his third term. Lindbergh comes in and he is, you know, aligning himself with Hitler. He's an isolationist, and it really is about a Jewish family in Newark, New Jersey, that's very, I think, strongly based on Philip Roth's family in light of this new sort of, you know, percolating fascism in America that sort of comes to a boil in a very interesting way. I recommend the book highly. If you want to read it, you know, let us know what you think about it. Maybe we can have a nice conversation about it in the future.
Now, that was the third term would have been 1940.
Right.
Before America went into it. Who was the Republican nominee that year?
Was it Dewey?
Was it Wendell Willkie, or was that 40?
Yes, yeah, I think it was Willkie.
It was Wendell. Okay. All right. Well, Wendell, step aside.
But it was it's a profound book, because it's like, you know, Philip Roth is a real master, and it's unbelievable to sort of, you know, to be in the hands of somebody that's such a great writer, because it's very slow building in setting the scene of how it could really work. Because it is a pretty huge conceit to try and pull off, but because he remained within the intimacy of the Jewish community, and a lot of it had to do with sort of these attempts to force assimilation as sort of phase one of how the Jews in America were going to be dealt with by a fascist administration, was to sort of start relocating Jews through businesses that were in cahoots with the government into different areas, and sort of, you know, break their family bonds and their sort of community bonds. And then, you know, who knows what would have happened next. I'm not going to ruin the book for anybody right now. Let's get into the news, Riley, before we start back up with Barry about the work. What we have to do,
the work,
to fight against Christo-fascism, as some people call it. So there are some bad insurgency attacks. There's an attack going on right now, or just earlier today in Jeddah, which I think Wayne covered a bit.
Yeah, in Saudi Arabia, they used a car. They hit the U.S. consulate with explosives and machine guns. Apparently, four security officers are dead at the U.S. consulate. Saudi security forces said they believe four of the attackers had seized a number of hostages inside the building.
Wow.
So this is an ongoing story, and as Wayne mentioned during his newscast, we'll keep you aware and abreast of what's going on.
And over the weekend, man, 70 people were killed. You know, after Fallujah, with the big publicity press that we had really taken a hit at the insurgents, it seems like they are just reorganizing.
Reorganizing, and they're stepping up their attacks, Mark, on Iraqis who they see as collaborators with the American government. Now, again, this has ample precedent in history.
The French resistance did it.
Yeah.
They struck at people. They felt at French people. They felt had collaborated with the Germans. Now, I don't want to necessarily put it in the same context. You know, this is the United States here.
Yeah.
But the bottom line, from the Iraqi point of view, that's what they're doing. They are striking out at people they see as collaborators with oppressors and invaders.
Well, they know if they can frighten those guys and terrorize them and kill them, that after the Americans leave, if you know, if and when they do, after the elections or whatever, they know that what's going to be left are Iraqis. And that, you know, and that the truth of the matter is that what Iraqi's going to fight against an insurgency that's still going to remain after their protectors are gone?
Well, yeah, and that insurgency is going to remain and apparently will continue to spread as the American forces hit in different places. We saw in Fallujah. When they hit in Fallujah, the insurgents dispersed to other cities. So now they're going out sending troops into these other cities, and the insurgents, well, they got a plan here. I read somewhere, and I can't remember the article that I saw this in, that before the siege of Fallujah, because the insurgents knew what was happening, they divided themselves up. A certain percentage of them stayed in Fallujah to fight and die,
uh-huh.
And the rest of them decided to disperse to the four winds or whatever, and to continue the battle.
Well, we were talking to Mick Ware and some other people that assess that, you know, by the time they went into Fallujah, if that's what you were saying, there wasn't a lot of
resistance. People, most of the civilian population had left. There was an insurgent population that had, decided ahead of time to stay and fight and die. They knew that.
And Musharraf in Pakistan, he recently said, this was yesterday, that they have no idea where Bin Laden is. It's I think that he's living in a cave beneath the White House. and, you know, whenever they need a new tape, when things get too calm, they'll go and send Dick down to pick up, you know, get the tall man out of the cage.
But you know what?
Musharraf
hit on a very interesting point, and that is he's criticizing the United States now, which he doesn't often do, but he's criticizing the U.S. for not having enough troops inside Afghanistan. Now, remember, Afghanistan was supposed to be the place where we were going to avenge September 11th, not Iraq. And Musharraf is saying, look, you want bin Laden, you want our cooperation, we can't seal this border by ourselves, we need more American troops, and he's taken the Bush administration to task for focusing on Iraq and not Afghanistan.
And now they say that the U.S. might cut force in Afghanistan by 2005 because Karzai is trying to cut a deal with the Taliban that exists there.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that all mean? See, it's always been my supposition that if they get bin Laden, Then the game is over on some level. As long as he's out there, they can use him. You know, if they want to take military action, what's to stop them from saying, oh, we think maybe bin Laden's in China.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he's in Iran. Maybe we should go over, you know, I just think that if they actually did it, and I'm not suggesting that they're letting him live, but I am suggesting that.
Well, you know, I saw
in Canada.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, you think so?
Well, after last week's visit by the president to Canada and the response that he got, it might be on the list.
Let me get on a plane. Yeah.
I just saw the picture of them pulling down that fake statue of him as
exactly.
A homage to the Saddam. You know what? That's very creative protest.
Yeah, Canadians are very clever people.
Yeah, they can be. That's how they are. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, I saw something on TV the other day that really kind of struck me in terms of, there was a documentary about Chinese Muslims.
Yeah.
Okay. And I realized that there is an ancient culture in that region of the world that we as Americans know absolutely nothing about. And it plays into Pakistan. It plays into Afghanistan. There's been trading among, you know, these different groups of people for thousands upon thousands of years. I didn't know that there had been Muslims from the Middle East that had married Chinese.
Yeah.
And that they had formed, I knew there was a Muslim region of China, but I didn't know that this culture had gone on and the trade and the intermingling had gone on for all these years.
Man, I got to get out more.
Yeah, me too.
It's 16 past the hour. We're going to continue our conversation with the Reverend Barry Lynn from the, I want to make sure I say it all right, the Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We're going to talk about morality. What is real morality? What is real Christian morality? And what can we do about the people that are exploiting the name of Christ to create a fascist movement within this country? And we're going to do the Dream Diary when we come back. How's that? It's 16 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition. Delivering you from evil in 3 hours or less on Air America Radio.
Two past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. Our guest is the Reverend Barry Lynn. He is the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and now he's going to have to sit through my dream from last night. I'm looking in a full-length mirror, and it's me, only it's a huge, ripped, muscled monster version of me, and I feel the raw power surging through my veins. Prepare yourself, world, for the awesome power of Steroid Mark. And besides the water retention, acne, man, breast, hypertension, cardiovascular disease, heart palpitations, impotence, and jaundice, I feel fantastic. My forearms look like two cats fighting under my skin. My back is so big you could show movies on it. My ass looks like somebody chopped a coconut in half and stuffed the hard shells into my thong. I look so good I may have to rip a stranger in half with my bare hands. The doorbell rings. What do you want, a-hole? You want a piece of Steroid Mark? It's Bush and Ashcroft carrying milk bottles. Bush, we're going to need some urine samples. Steroids are killing morning talk radio. And then Ashcroft says, Mark, this godless secular humanist science experiment has got to stop. I say, that's it. Prepare for pain, pencil necks. I flex and I rip right through my shirt. I grab my Louisville Slugger and I chase Bush and Ashcroft around the dining table, bashing and pummeling everything in my path. I catch Ashcroft by the scruff of the neck and put his head on a tee. I swing the Louisville Slugger and crack! His head ripped from his shoulders in a shower of blood and went flying back, 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 and just beyond the outstretched glove of Manny Ramirez. Home run! Then I pin Bush down on the floor, rip out his heart with my bare hands, and show it to him beating. I smile, eat it, and then push Bush's head on a tee and give it a healthy whack. Bush's severed head goes back, back, back. Oh, it's just foul! Breathing hard, I look around. I've got no more heads for batting practice. How is this possible? Someone's going to pay for this. I woke up and my bed was filled with wall sconces. I'm sweating.
Wow,
I'm
not
sweating. I'm officially sweating. That was some heavy stuff, man. What do you think of that, Barry?
I had to come up last night, of course, to get up early enough to do this program, and the only dream I remember was something to do with Hillary Clinton. what can I tell? And I don't remember. I'm not saying that in any way that anyone should misconstrue, but it is nice to be here. You know, you guys do every day a tremendous, fascinating, intriguing three-hour program. You do more in the 3 hours every day than Oliver Stone did for Alexander the Great in that 3 hour movie.
Did you see it?
Of course I saw it.
My father said it wasn't that great.
It wasn't that great. Now, let me talk to your father. No, I'll tell you, this, in spite of the fact that there is a battle scene involving men on horses fighting men on elephants, which lasts for about 3.5 minutes, that's great.
Yes.
But the rest of it, it's pretty terrible. And I particularly liked it when the one Greek said to the other, I know you consider me a crusty old sod. Now, you think that Greeks talk that way? They didn't. They didn't.
No.
I don't want to see the director's cut either, which is probably 17 and a half hours, and it'll be out on DVD next week.
Dan Fashman, son of Lewis and Linda Fashman, has put a link to your website on our site, morningsedition.com. What is the name of your website?
It's www.au.org.
Okay.
www.au.org. All kinds of information about what you can do and how to get the kind of information we're talking about this morning so you can do something about it in your community. You can act when these guys come up with bad pieces of legislation. How do you connect to your congressman or woman to say, don't do this?
Right. What you can do specifically to counteract the extreme Christian rights, you know, complete disrespect for the separation of church and state as a means to an end to serve their own agenda. Now, there's an issue here in Denver that's happening now where they had this yearly parade, which was just a small parade to bring people to the business area, you know, and it was, they used to have Merry Christmas, apparently a Merry Christmas banner, and they decided to change it to Happy Holidays, and there was a reaction. There are people out there that feel justified in reacting now because they are emboldened by the religious rights movements in terms of, here's a quote here, this guy, these emails that were sent in, one of them said, we're the majority, quit treating us like a minority, and stop your political correctness. Now, the arrogance of just reading that statement makes me seethe, because I can't stand people that are that arrogant and they are that wrong about what this is about.
No, well, they are wrong about it, and of course, one of the things that they fail to recognize is that the majority in this country is still Christian. They still run the country.
Yes.
It's not like they are some hopeless, helpless minority. You know, David Limbaugh, Rush Limbaugh's younger and smarter brother, has written this book called Persecution that has a lion on the cover to try to remind Christians that, yes, indeed, some Roman emperors did feed Christians to the lions, as if we're having some kind of a massive level of persecution of American Christians today in the United States. That is an absurd idea, but it is the basis for going on complaining about parades, complaining when they decide to have a neutral as opposed to a Christian holiday ceremony or choral ceremony.
The people
at the
that
end
think
of the
like
school.
This are not the majority. The people,
no,
that
of course, are, they're not.
They're just like, because even in retrospect, even with Christians, 64% of this country believe that, you know, people should be allowed to, you know, have the civil unions. They should be allowed to have safe abortions. The minority of the people think the other way.
No, absolutely. And the newest poll shows 59% of Americans say don't appoint Supreme Court nominees that are going to overturn Roe versus Wade. 59%. That's the majority view. Jerry Falwell, Pat Robertson were not elected to any office on November 2nd. But you're right about this, too. The fact that there's this claim that morals voters came out and it made a big difference for the president and changed the Senate and all of this is emboldening people to do the most peculiar things.
Okay,
recently.
You can hold that thought. And also, 866-303-2270. If you got questions for Reverend Barry Lynn, 866-303-2270. You write down what you were saying. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but we got to take a break here.
No, we're going to take a break. We got more with the Reverend Barry Lynn and the Monday Job Listing here on Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, our guest in studio is Reverend Barry Lynn. He's the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We were talking about a couple of things. He's going to, you know, refresh our memory and get back into what he was talking about. But I got to take this call because when this guy calls, I got to keep him on the line and then get him off as quickly as possible. But I like talking to him because, you know, our president is openly operating in a different reality. And we think it's important that America knows what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. And once again, joining us now on the phone from Planet Bush is correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God stepping you in the wood chipper and watching the sin drain right out of you.
Okay. Yeah, well, let's talk about the separation of church and state.
That's all right, then. Well, you know, all that's about to end, Mark.
Oh,
church and state are about to crash into each other like a couple of NASCARs on the back straightaway.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I believe the new term will be chate or sturch.
Oh,
but we haven't really
come
found
on.
That now.
That's what
I
Bush
like
wants.
Church,
that's what Bush wants, isn't it, buddy?
Well, you know, what was lacking was the glue. President George W. Bush, two terms mandate.
All right.
Sticky white substance that sticks church and state together.
Dude, this country was founded on the idea that church and state should be separate. Do you understand that?
Mark, the liberals have really done a number on you. The truth is, the founding fathers were all clergymen, and many of them had thriving TV ministries.
Oh, come on.
You know, this crazy idea of separating church and state didn't come about until the 1970s when disco music turned people gay.
What are you talking about?
It was all Jimmy Carter's fault.
Dude,
I blame him.
Lawton, the founding fathers were afraid that if we merged church and state, it would lead to religious persecution and abuses of abuses of power. If we did that here, wouldn't that make our government just like the Taliban?
Mark, the Taliban doesn't have Christian rock bands or mega churches with a food court. You can't fight this. God has consecrated the sturch. And if you're so afraid of godly, rich, white people improving every aspect of your sad, secular life, you could just curl up with Charles Darwin and die.
That's what I will do. That's what I mean. The church wants to insinuate itself into every aspect of society and my life.
Well, that's a good point. You know, the sturch should run the military, too. You know, Jesus was an excellent military commander, fought hundreds of battles. That Jesus smote him some liberal Philistines, that's for sure. You can look that up.
Jesus
That's
was
in the Bible.
What are you talking about? It's not. So I guess the church should take over the private sector, too, then, right?
I like the way you think.
No, I'm not.
It's called consuming for Christ. It's all there in the Bible. You know, Paul's second letter to the Ephesians urged them to refinance.
What are you talking about?
Every time I'm at the mall, I feel his presence.
Well, that's you.
He's there in the Jamba Juice and the Lady Foot Locker. He's in every place except Victoria's Secret, you know, because the Lord will not abide Brazilian cut pants.
This isn't about God. This is about power. In fact, this is about taking power out of God's hands and into your own. And that's blasphemy, isn't it? It's blasphemy. Do you hear me? It's blasphemy. You're talking blasphemy. Yeah, that's right. Let it out.
I hate this church. We want it all, Mark. We don't care how we get it.
Right.
Religion's just our pretext. It's all about grace.
Yeah.
We want God to justify our grace.
Yes.
If we had to choose between God and our big house in the suburbs, it would be like, see you later, God.
Exactly.
No one knew.
Yes. Doesn't it feel better to get that out?
I hate it.
Doesn't it feel better? Huh? All right.
In God we trust. It's right there on the quarter.
I like it better when you're crying.
I like it
better when you're crying.
All right.
Martin.
God loves you.
All right. Take care.
Deal with it. And you too, Reverend. He loves you too. I'm praying for you.
Thank you. God bless America.
All right,
come on.
Oh, my God.
Well, disturbing, isn't it? He is a disturbing guy, but I tell you, he makes a lot more sense than Jerry Falwell.
So let's finish that point that you were making about how... What was the point?
Well, here's the point. Well, I don't know if it was the one I was going to make, but here's a point I will make, and that is that people feel emboldened. They think that Jerry Falwell's running the country now, and therefore you can pass provisions in local school districts like out in Dover, Pennsylvania, that requires the teaching of something called intelligent design, which is just kind of creationism all gussied up, as we used to say. It's another phony alternative, a pseudoscientific alternative to evolution. This is a way to dumb down America's schools. It's the same group of people that are out there trying to make sure that kids don't get sound sex education, that they don't get any controversial
fact-based education.
Facts do not matter to these people. They don't matter in the same way to Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson that they don't matter to the president. The president of the United States likes to say to people, as we now know from the Paul O'Neill book, the first guy to leave the cabinet before everyone left the cabinet. And Paul O'Neill said the president likes to use the phrase, "I don't like to argue with myself." In other words, don't give me any facts, because that only confuses the matter. So if you get tons and tons of evidence that says evolution obviously is the scientific explanation of how we got to this place, if you have tons of evidence that abstinence-only sex education doesn't work, the religious right says don't bother me with the truth because I already have an ideological fixation on the answer.
Right. Let's take a call. Chris in Minneapolis. Good morning, Chris. What's on your mind?
Hey, Chris.
Good morning. I think these churches have become more crooked than any of the biggest businesses like Enron and some of these other businesses that are horribly rape people. How did churches become tax-free in the first place? Why churches? I mean, why do they get to amass such large quantities of money and not pay a damn penny on it?
Okay, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks for the call. It's an interesting question.
It's a good point, Chris. And one of the things that's happened in this country from the very beginning is that churches were assumed to be tax exempt. Now, then we moved into a system where a lot of charities and educational institutions are tax exempt. But tax exemption is a privilege. It is not a right guaranteed under the Constitution to churches or anybody else. We could decide to move away from that scenario, and we certainly should strip churches of tax exemptions when they do illegal things, including endorse candidates for public office, use the resources that come into the collection plate to help elect somebody to the presidency. We complain about that, as you know, Mark, a lot.
Yeah, what about the resources that come into the church through faith-based initiatives? I mean, that just seems like a way that the government just funnels off and makes the church an arm of itself in order to guarantee its power. Am I wrong?
No, you're absolutely right. And look at the kinds of people who have gotten money from the so-called faith-based initiative. $500,000 goes to Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing. Speaking of what Chris, your caller, just said, Operation Blessing was a very controversial ministry of Brother Robertson's down there in Virginia for one reason. He used to take airplanes, fly them in with medical supplies into Africa, and then when he was coming back, he would have those same airplanes stop and pick up his diamond mining equipment and bring it back to the United States because he has diamond, timber, and gold interests in Africa.
Was that the Diamonds for Christ movement?
That was the Diamonds for Christ movement.
I think I heard about that.
It was a much bigger move than Emeralds for Elvis, which I tried initially. But that didn't work. You got to put Christian into the title. Now, he wasn't indicted for this, although he was certainly under investigation by the Virginia Attorney General's office. He finally gave money back, said, yes, I did the wrong thing, but they had to catch him hand in the cookie jar 3 times before he gave that money back. So you're right. There are all kinds of these scandals that are out there. They need to be looked at because tax exemption, again, it's a privilege. It is not a right guaranteed by the Constitution or any other document, not even the Bible.
Let's take one more call before we go to break here. Tim, how are you, Tim, in Battle Creek, Missouri?
Hi.
Or Michigan. Michigan, sorry.
Yes, Battle Creek, Michigan.
Sorry.
How are you?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine.
What's on your mind?
I'd like to premise myself by saying I'm not one of the emboldened Christians,
mm-hmm.
but I am a bold Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And my emboldenedness towards what goes on in our country started long before the election in November. It started mm-hmm. several years ago when I was watching what I thought were rights of people of America being chiseled away slowly,
mm-hmm.
not in a mass quantity, but in a slow movement, and a lot of it with Barry Lynn. And I must admit that I have yet to find something to agree with Barry Lynn, and I've seen him on several occasions, and I really have tried to see it as an agreement somewhere,
mm-hmm.
but I find it very difficult. But my question to Barry Lynn, and I would comment too if you want, my question is, Barry, where do you see your position ultimately ending up in America? What do you see Christianity in America being in the end of this whole situation?
Rather than
going a day at a time
yeah.
or an inch at a time, go to the end of the ruler, tell me what you see
okay.
that you would prefer and that you would like to see in this country.
All right, Tim, that's a great question. And let's, you know, you put it together. We're going to deal with that question specifically when we come back after this. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Courtesy of Air America Radio.
Nine past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley, our guest in studio. All morning has been the Reverend Barry Lynn. He is the Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. He's been given a question from a fellow named Tim in Battle Creek, Michigan. What is your vision for the future of Christianity, Barry?
Yeah, well, my vision is that Christianity is to be everything that people like Tim and I, as a Christian minister, can make it ourselves. But the day that we become dependent on having any blessing, literally or figuratively, from the United States government or the state government in Michigan, is the day we start to give up our own commitment to making people listen to what we say, not because they're forced to, but because they like what we are saying to them. That's all got to be done voluntarily. Why do you think, Tim, that this is, in fact, the most religious country in the Western world, that we've got more church attendance, more people who believe in God than any other place? It's because people who choose to be religious in America choose to do so voluntarily, not because it's the state church, not because the church is paying us to be religious.
Let's hear from Tim. Tim, can you put him on there, Chris? Hey, Tim, do you hear the Barry, the Reverend talking to you?
Yeah, I do, yep.
And what's your response?
Well, I mean, I have to look back at the example that's going to be coming up here in the Supreme Court here soon concerning God in public statements. The words of God are even on the Supreme Court itself. There are words of God in the Jefferson Memorial. There are words of God in public buildings in Washington that have been there for decades.
Okay, Barry.
Tim.
The mere fact that these statements exist on these type of buildings says that decades ago, this country was in a different position in Christianity than it is today.
Jim, here's the problem with that. Do you honestly believe that because there are words about God in the Jefferson Memorial, that proves anything about the direction of Christianity in this country? I mean, the very last thing we ought to be worried about is when government starts to put up, you know, a nativity scene around the holidays or put up some kind of God Bless America poster. It's not up to the government to do those things. That was not, in fact, what the founders of this country wanted. They wanted to keep a decent distance between government and religion because they thought ultimately it would strengthen both. And, of course, it has in the United States. And I'll tell you, by the way, there are no references to, or you can't read, unless you happen to read Hebrew, anything but a couple of words from the Ten Commandments on a tablet in the Supreme Court chamber. There are no words of God or excerpts from the Bible in the Supreme Court, although that's a commonly held myth by my friends on the right.
What is the statement right above their heads?
It's not from the Bible.
No, I didn't say that. I said a reference to God.
No, I don't think
it's a reference to the Bible. No, sir.
Well,
I said that it's a reference to God, and there are references
Tim,
I'm not going to argue those things with you. That's not my issue.
Okay, but my issue isn't that either. My issue is, why does it take some kind of statement like, God bless this honorable court, which is something they do say, not that anybody pays attention to it, but they say it. Why is that more important than you going out and voluntarily promoting your faith instead of worrying about whether the government's doing enough to promote it for you?
It's your responsibility and my responsibility
as religious figures to do that where it's appropriate. If you depend on government, we are lost. It's hopeless.
But where would you consider it to be appropriate? I'm saying that if I wanted to be involved in my local Christmas parade, or as you would say, probably a holiday parade, you're asking that I be restrained from exercising my right to say something in public.
No, I'm not saying that.
Thanks for your call, man. This is also an issue about this holiday parade in Denver. Is that what he's saying is that he's being stifled, he's being victimized if you say it's a holiday parade.
Yeah, it becomes a First Amendment. Yeah,
but they're still not willing to, bring in other groups. I mean, the truth of the matter is usually when that argument is made, they are placing themselves as the victim. And if it was a holiday parade, why not have all holidays represented?
Sure, and if it was a private holiday parade, if it wasn't some kind of government parade, which is, I believe, the roots of it in Denver were, government, let's do this, let's bring people in, we wouldn't be having this fuss. If people who wanted to be religious simply wanted to get together, allowing other people into the parade, too, so that they didn't take up the entire parade route every weekend before December 25th, there wouldn't be a problem. Then they would be on strong First Amendment grounds. But when you want the government to basically endorse your religion over others, that's when you get in trouble. And believe me, you don't need government endorsement of religion.
Well, there's a lot of people, and this is like, let's talk about morality. Morality that is separate, that morality obviously can exist in a secular world.
Of course it can.
And that there's something about this type of Christianity that some of these people talk about where they believe that morality doesn't exist outside of a religious context, which is ridiculous. And that obviously there are some things wrong with culture. And these people that they see a lack of morality, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's some sort of inquisition against them. And let's talk a little bit about secular morality.
Well, secular morality, Senator Joe Lieberman got in some trouble during the 2000 election campaign when he suggested that people who were religious were probably more moral than people who were not. After Abe Foxman at the Anti-Defamation League and myself and a couple of other people pointed out the inaccuracy of that statement, he did repudiate it. But there is this sense that you cannot form any kind of a coherent moral system unless you are also religious, and I think that is flatly false. You can form immoral religious systems, and you can form moral secular systems. You can also form moral religious systems as long as you don't expect the government to be the people who enforce your morality. If you don't want to see Desperate Housewives, please turn the channel. Turn the channel.
And also, if you don't want to have a president that kills hundreds of thousands of people, and saying that he's justified by God, you should vote him out of office. And there's also moral rationalizations that people make in the name of religion. It seems to me that morality in the hands of religious fanatics is much more dangerous than almost anything on this world.
Well, it's because it combines the idea of moral absolute with an absolute literal belief in whatever your religious tradition is. And if you go too far, then you reach the place where you fly airplanes into buildings because you know it is God's will to do so and that you will be rewarded instantly for that action. Luckily, we haven't come to that point with American Christians yet.
Barry, you have your finger on the pulse of some of these evangelical groups and some of the evangelical churches. Do you get a sense that the election has emboldened them to go out and recruit? I was approached by somebody on the street in front of my house asking me what church I belong to. Is this an isolated incident, or is this something that is now starting to go on because people are being told to go out and proselytize?
No, I think that this has been going on for some time, and I do think that people have what I call the one-bite rule. That is, that people do and should have a chance to come up once to your house.
If I had no problem with it.
On the door and say, do you want to hear about my religion? If you say no, then they ought to leave and go somewhere else. But I think people do have, as Tim does, the caller from Michigan, the right to try to convince you that you're not pure enough, moral enough, or what have you, and that he's got all the answers. But please don't have the government pay for his taxi cab to come to your house to tell you,
right,
maybe I got a better answer.
We've got a guy in Connecticut who wants to respond to Tim quickly. Chris in Connecticut, how are you?
Hey, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Yeah.
The caller, Jim,
yeah, Tim,
who was on earlier, Tim. There are a couple of things. First of all, he strikes me as the kind of person that we keep running into, which is a lazy Christian, someone who wants the government to practice their faith for them so they don't have to. I'm curious what exactly he's not being allowed to do in his local Christmas pageant. I mean, does he want to carry a cross? Is he Jim Caviezel? What's going on? I'm curious. I think he should go to your blog.
Yes.
Somebody's been posting a lot of quotes from founding fathers all morning on the topic of their opinion of Christianity and religion, and I think he would be very, very surprised by some of them.
He would indeed.
Then go to morningsedition.com and blog away, Tim, and see what the founding fathers had to say about that. We're going to be back with more with Barry Lynn. We got a lot of other stuff. We got our guests coming up in the next hour. This is going to be interesting to have you both in here.
Yeah.
Dr. Helen Fisher, author of Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love, to talk about, she's also an anthropology professor, to talk about how sexuality is manipulated by elites, religions, tribes.
Religion and sex, the same hour.
Hot.
You mean there's a chemistry to love?
Yeah.
Somebody forgot to tell me. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
Mark Maron, it's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
Blah, 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 blah.
Good morning, geniuses, philosopher, kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, Christians of all kinds, non-Christians of all kinds, Jews, Buddhists, Muslims, Wiccans. Whoever you are, welcome aboard. Thank you for coming out to Seattle this last week, and all you people that drove all the way from Portland to see me. That was beautiful and nice. Rory, Jesse, your friends, the bakers, the people, the bakers, the candlestick makers, all you people in Seattle who came out to see me because you listened to us in the middle of the night. Very encouraging. Really great to see the people enjoying the show so much, Mark. Someone sent Mark a drum corps record.
A drum corps CD, the American International Championship from 1976.
Tremendous. This weekend, this Friday, Boston. Friday, December 10th, live broadcast from the Someday Cafe in Davis Square in Somerville. Come down and hang out. Our guests are going to include Barney Frank is going to come by. Comedian Jimmy Tingle's coming. Musician Ted Leo is going to be there. Barry Crimmins is going to come. There are no tickets necessary. Just come by, have a cup of coffee, and you can hang out with me and Mark and Pashman, Son of Lewis, and Linda Pashman. If you want to meet Dan.
Free whitefish salad.
That's really... Don't say that.
I know. I'm sorry.
That's right. There's no free whitefish salad. But there is... And Dan Pashman for you ladies out there taking a liking to the Pashman.
Man, the hunk of burning love.
Yeah, Pashman is a he's a divider, though. He's not a uniter. Pashman is a divider.
Yep.
And, you know, there are some people that love the Pashman, and then there are people that just like him. Oh, look at that. He's in the booth now with his beard. What's with the beard, dude? You know, don't get...
he's trying to look more like Bruce's idol.
If he comes in, it'll be like 15 minutes about why beard are right, you know. We'll save it for Passman's rules. And Brendan P.W. McDonald is off in Orlando this week with his family on rides, enjoying the company of Mickey Mouse.
And Disney things up.
You can email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com, though we can't get into that today. We can't get into the email for whatever. You can blog
and have fun with the crew. You can go there and disrupt things, or you can go there and be friendly. Be a blog snotter. Be a blog happy person.
Or you can actually, you know, post quotes from our founding fathers, like someone apparently has been doing.
We've got some right now. We know things are tough in the job market, so we've decided to help out. We scanned through the Sunday Help Wanted listings and found this for our Mornings Edition Monday job listing.
There you go.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations. How would you like to be a caring, altruistic presence representing the best America has to offer on the world stage? Then go save the whales, hippie, because America needs a U.N. ambassador. As U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, you will be America's face to the world. So please be adept at saying outrageous things without snickering, smirking, or otherwise breaking concerned citizen of the world character. Because you will be presenting the Bush administration's policies before the United Nations. You should be unfazed by the sight of people in weird ethnic outfits rolling their eyes at everything you say. But don't worry, if we have to have someone present a particularly humiliating dog and pony show, we'll send an expendable cabinet member. This job doesn't pay a lot, but you will be able to park anywhere you damn well please on the east side of Manhattan. And finally, please don't apply if you speak any foreign languages whatsoever. It just makes it seem like we're sucking up to them. Our guest in the studio all morning has been the Reverend Barry Lynn, the director of Americans United for the Separation of Church and State. And it's interesting, Barry, you were just talking about your experience with Tom DeLay. Well, Tom DeLay, hopefully, we can only hope that he's in a lot of hot water. Isn't that right, Riley?
Well, let's pray he's in hot water. He's even in more hot water now because Tom DeLay is raising money for his legal defense fund. Now, why he'd need one since he's not indicted is absolutely beyond me, but hey, you know, things happen. He has raked in more than $400,000 for this fund since July, and now people are starting to ask how he raised the cash in the past. A study released this week, to be released this week, by Public Citizen, which is a watchdog group, finds that the congressman received 7 checks for the defense fund totaling $9,500 from lobbyists or members of law firms registered to lobby the Congress.
But dig this. This is how slimy this bastard is, all right? He says that, you know, it's not against the law because, dig this, they were signed by the wives of the lobbyists. What a scum. This dude's like, come on, man, get your wife to sign a check. I'm in hot water, man.
I need your help.
He's just a nuanced guy. He's he's a master of nuance.
What were those check signs, Stepford or something?
He's a neocon puppet bug catcher.
It's a very... Now, the Reverend Barry Lynn apparently has some history with Tom DeLay that even he didn't know about. Tell us that story.
Yeah, actually, Tom DeLay was written up by the Washington Post magazine about a year and a half ago, and the guy who was doing the story called me up one day after spending a week with Tom DeLay and said, you know, Tom DeLay doesn't like you. And I kind of suspected he probably didn't like me, but he said, he really doesn't like you. I mean, he hates you more than he hates Hillary Clinton.
Wow.
Because I thought, since I, of course, dreamed about her last night, but let's not go into that. Then he says that Tom DeLay actually told this fellow, Tom DeLay says that every time we in Congress try to do something good, Barry Lynn stops it. What? Now, that was very interesting because I thought, I like to think that we're effective, but I don't think we did that. And then, just in the true form to finish the story, of course, the Washington Post reporter said, well, Tom obviously knows you, but I've never heard of you.
But you're a very powerful man, according to Tom.
Very powerful in Tom's
and
mind. The hammer.
Yeah, the hammer. I like to call him the bug killer because he used to be an exterminator.
No, he did. You know, he doesn't believe in evolution. He said he doesn't believe in, like, it's a matter of belief. Like, I don't believe X should have won Best New Latin Grammy winner. I think somebody else should have. That's a matter of belief. Evolution is a matter of fact. You know, but he doesn't know the difference.
So here's another story that I think that warrants our attention is that they're trying to, they're going through with privatizing the collection of taxes.
This is the IRS is doing this, right?
Well, the IRS, with support from the Bush administration, and this is an interesting new business opportunity because you can get these subcontractors who will go and collect taxes for profit because, obviously, the IRS is not doing the job they want to because they've been stifled by the administration and their budgets have been cut. And this is a way that they do this. This is a way that the Republicans do this. They drain the government money so they can bring in the privatizers. Now, what I'm wondering is, not unlike military contractors in Iraq, are they going to allow these guys to torture. I think that's going to be the big question, is whether or not these private tax collecting companies will be able to administer torture or carry guns or, you know, do it that way.
Well, see, this is to collect back taxes. And what's fascinating to me about this is that now you've got people on both sides of the equation. You got these lawyers that advertise on TV that say that they can get your IRS back tax debt reduced to 20 cents on the dollar or whatever it is. And now you've got the Bush administration and the IRS preparing to send private people, I guess lawyers, after the same group of people.
Yeah, you didn't bring me up here all the way from Washington and expect that I don't have some inside information. I don't know about this. No, you're not going to be able to torture these privatized tax collectors. Will, however, be able to kill your pets.
Oh,
yeah, that's what's
that's a
happen.
Sore point, a sore spot with him.
Well, Mark Barron's got pets. I know he does. I have pets, but no, that's what I heard. Could be just a nasty rumor. I don't know.
A couple of my cats could. You know what's hilarious about the cats, Riley? You know, I'm on stage in Seattle, and I didn't realize these two people, this nice couple sitting up front, they were just, I didn't know who they were. I'd never met them before, and I'm in the middle of my act, and the woman who was sitting there goes, tell us about the cats. You know, but here's another weird thing. Is I mentioned on the air that I'm going to be giving one of my cats to the Yemeni guy that owns the deli across the street. Nice guy. I've known him a long time. You know, I've been living there for years. He's a very sweet man.
And he wanted a mouser, right?
Well, I mean, he didn't say that. I just assumed that. But you know what? I get a call from one of the cat ladies. One of the cat ladies who I was in touch with, the one woman, Raquel, who actually took care of my cats and, you know, helped me get the mother spayed, actually took them, not spayed, yeah, spayed, took the mother to be fixed, but she called me and goes, a Nan called and said that you were going to be giving one of your cats to a store. And I'm like, oh, my God.
The circle is never unbroken.
Well, that's just it. You know, it's like Nan, who I haven't talked to in a couple of months, is now calling Raquel to sort of, like, make sure to look over me and my cat behavior, to monitor it. You see what they're doing? They're infiltrating my life to make sure that I behave a certain way. They were concerned. The concern is when a cat is a mouser, you give a cat to a store, that the store owner will starve the cat in order to actually deal with the rodent problem.
No, oh, wow. That's what Tom DeLay used to do. That was one of his techniques at extermination, would just starve the cats and then they'll eat more mice. That's what I heard. That's just a nasty rumor. Another rumor that I brought to you from Washington, D.C.
And now he's just doing it to Democrats.
Yeah.
Gerrymandering.
How much did he collect, did you say? $400,000?
It's new more than 400.
Well, you know, if I'm as good as he thinks I am about doing damage to his program, maybe he'd like to hire me to be his lawyer.
Yeah, now, that would be an idea. You are a practicing attorney.
I am a practicing attorney. If he asks, if he calls, you'll be the first media outlet to know.
That'd be great. We'd love to promote that.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, does he play the...
DeLay and Lynn
together for the first time. Would you take all this 400 long here?
Yeah.
Well, it was a down payment, sure.
And by the way, he's not going to starve the cat. It's 16 past the hour. I'm not going to starve the cat. That's what I'm telling Nan and Raquel. We've got Dr. Helen Fisher, the author of Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love, and a professor of anthropology at Rutgers University, and she's going to talk about how sexuality is manipulated by people in control. 17 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition. It's not Marxism. It's Marxism. Mark Maron and Mark Riley every morning on Air America Radio.
Two past the hour, Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Our guest all morning has been the Reverend Barry Lynn. And he, of course, is the executive director of Americans United for a Separation of Church and State. We've had some interesting conversations about that and some great calls. Now we have another guest. We're going to turn to sex in just a minute. Let me do my presidential palm pilot. This came in from a guy named Frank who's wearing fatigues. This is Donald Rumsfeld's schedule for the day. 6 a.m., wake up, stay in bed until Bush calls and begs me to get up. Then get up very slowly. 7 a.m., look at Ready Reserve list, see if there are any World War I vets just sitting around. 8 a.m., breakfast, note, that reminds me, find out if Captain Crunch is ready for active duty. 10 a.m., Arrive at office. Note, when receptionist asks how I am, give her 4-minute response using nothing but adverbs. Act like that made perfect sense. 1 p.m., design special Pat Tillman combat medal for bravery under fire from your own troops.
Ooh.
6 p.m., look into possibility of a backdoor draft of members of Salvation and or KISS armies. There are at least 150,000 right there. Now, to bring everybody into the conversation, Dr. Helen Fisher is a professor of anthropology at Rutgers University, author of the recent book, Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love, and she is here. Good morning, Helen.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming down. Since we are talking about the religious right and their influence and the nature of how they're trying to dictate this culture's behavior, what is it about repressing sexuality how does that function in terms of keeping control of people, and what are the results of that?
I think there's many, first of all, throughout human evolution, the people in control of the culture have tried to control the sexuality, and the parents of young boys and girls try to control their sexuality everywhere on earth, because for a Darwinian perspective, if you have 4 children and I have no children, you live on and I die out. So the human brain is truly built to have a real opinion about who your children have babies with,
right?
Because you're passing your own DNA on into eternity. So, everybody has an opinion about who their children are going to copulate with and marry,
right,
and breed with. So I'm not surprised that the right is involved in it. It's their solipsisticness, the fact that they want to tell the rest of us how to do our breeding, that so astonishes me, that they are so willing to, co-opt sort of a whole country they want us to see the whole world their way. I suppose that's an adaptive mechanism from a Darwinian perspective, but you would think that the human animal would have evolved out of that somehow.
So you think in some sense it's about, first of all, making more Christians who have the same,
sure,
ideology as they do.
Yes. They've even begun to think that religion is a little bit like a gene. They call it a meme instead of a gene.
Mm-hmm.
And that a religion is designed to propagate itself. So it's going to create all kinds of values and ideals and purposes and goals that continue to pull in more members, to keep more members, and reproduce more members.
But also, isn't it when you repress somebody's basic biological needs like that, being that sex is one of them, don't they become more easily controlled in other areas of their life?
Probably. But it doesn't work. That's the real bottom line. This abstinence does not work. Because, in fact, it creates a real problem for the children and for the family.
Mm-hmm.
Because the children, girls, they'll go 3 years or so, believing in this abstinence only process. And then one night they have too much beer and they go off and they sleep with a boy.
Or seven.
and they have no contraception. They have no idea what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're in a much worse pickle than if they had had. There's so much data on this that sexual education creates a sexual intelligence.
And when you buckle, when you live in shame, the possibilities of you just doing it without contraception because you don't think you're ever going to do it is probably higher.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Not only that, but, sex was built not only to be fun, but to be good for you.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you've got the right partner and it's the right time, a lot of these, I'm not advocating everybody, as far as I'm concerned, should make their own decisions. But the long and short of it is it can be good for you in many ways.
Even alone.
Now, it's interesting. When you look at how people try to control folks sexually over the years, there's got to be an imbalance between the attempt to control men and the attempt to control women.
Yes, and that is, you see that throughout the agrarian revolution. For the last 10,000 years, the control of women has been much stronger than the control of men. What's interesting is, in hunting and gathering societies where women are extremely economically powerful, they're also sexually and socially powerful, and there's not all these rules against female sexuality that we have inherited from our farming past. On the farm, the man really had a tremendous amount of economic power, and the woman was really the vessel that bore his seed, and so it became, in all agrarian societies, female sexuality is extremely controlled. And of course now what we're seeing in the world is women moving back into the workforce and economically becoming more powerful and trying to express their sexuality the way they were sort of built to do.
And that scares simple men.
Yes, it does. Simple men.
We can't have all that girl sex power running around the house.
Well, why it scares simple
evil men don't.
Why?
Because they're scared they're going to lose control of themselves.
Of absolutely. Their own sexuality, of their own genetic future. And by the way, they are simple.
Yes. Helen Fisher is our guest. Her book is Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. We're going to bring God into this after this break with Barry Lynn. And we'll see what happens then once we bring God into the mix of sex.
There you go.
All right. Air America Radio.
I'm tired of having sex.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
It's 34 past the hour. Mark Maron, that's Mark Riley. You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Our guests, Pearl, the Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State, and Dr. Helen Fisher, Professor of Anthropology at Rutgers University, author of the recent book, Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. We were just talking about how much female sexuality threatens the simple man, and Helen actually said, I want to talk about how simple they are.
How simple are they?
Well, you know, I mean, I wrote a book on gender differences, and there really are some gender differences, and one thing that happens is when you inject testosterone, a person's thinking becomes more narrow, more focused, and more on the present.
Mm-hmm.
And men tend to be more, this is averages, men tend to be more inflexible than women do. They tend to think more abstractly, good and evil. And these guys running this country at this point seem to have very high testosterone. And they must have, I mean, their brain must be actually patterned to make than actually feel that this is simple.
Yeah,
lost the nuance that the rest of us can see.
Well, it helps that the Republican and conservative ideology is so narrow in and of itself. Maybe that promotes more testosterone levels, you know,
it's
getting
true.
Higher.
That could be a feedback system, in other words. If you live in it, you can... Yeah, it could be.
You know, I'm sitting here, I don't know about the testosterone level, but, I mean, I'm red-faced because you referred in such excruciating detail, women, vessel that bore his seed. Can you imagine how embarrassed I am? It's like that. I've never heard stuff
like
this.
Well, an awful
before.
Lot of women are horrified.
No, they,
you know, we've got 10,000 years of
and they
women who've
can
had
I
a
ask
problem
you,
with it.
Can I ask you a question? You know, I traveled when I was with the ACLU and worked for the ACLU with the Ed Meese Pornography Commission around the United States looking at everything they did, all their goofy slideshows, and they'd visit adult bookstores in other cities and like a field trip, and I'd go with them. One of the things, though, is America as prudish as some on the religious right would like to think? It seems to me that the Internet, the VCR, were adopted by some people, an enormous number of people, only when they discovered that those technologies gave them access to sexually explicit material.
Yeah.
And I was an early adopter, so I didn't care. But I mean, we're
even
really
that a reverend just admitted to that.
Well, this an early adopter, that means I got it before I even knew there were dirty pictures on it.
This is a good question, though. Are we prudes? I once was talking to a woman from Asia, and I said that her Americans were prudes, and she said, how could you say that? You're constantly talking about sex. You're constantly worrying. You know, you're constantly doing it. And I thought to myself, that is curious, because I feel that we are prudes.
Talking's not really doing, is it?
No, and I mean, you take a look at the Europeans. Take a look at the Europeans. I mean, they are much less prudish about sex. I mean, they're much more comfortable with abortion. They're much more comfortable with, I should say, a woman's right to choose. I mean, they're much more comfortable with nudity in public. I've often thought, you know, the high testosterone is associated with not only sex, but with aggression.
Mm-hmm.
And we seem to be a very aggressive country, whereas the other countries seem to be more sexual. It's almost as if our chemistry has gone towards aggressiveness and controlling sexuality, whereas other countries have gone for sexual expression.
Well, that's an interesting point, because porn is, I think it has something to do with capitalism, with the product of sex and with the objectification of women and the objectification of sex, that, you know, it's not really about intimacy, you know, in terms of how sexualized this country is. It's about pornography. It can be about strippers. It's very interesting how mainstream strippers and pornography are in this culture. And that's not necessarily that's a very specific way of defining sexuality, and it has to do with marketing.
Yeah, I don't know. I would think that if we dialed back a million years ago, we would probably find some porn there too. I mean,
oh,
I think
you kidding?
Human
it was probably the primary form of entertainment in cave time days. What else are they going to do?
Yeah.
It's like,
what
else are they
going to put on the wall?
What about those bison hunts? Bison hunts, that's the more aggressive use of testosterone.
Yeah, you know.
Go after the bison.
Live sex shows were probably, they probably weren't entertainment. They were probably an inevitability.
They build houses.
But even then they were trying to control. I don't know. You know, you take a look at hunting and gathering societies, and I'm not advocating this, but young children will start to play at sex very young.
Yeah.
And by age 5 and 6, by age 10, they're playing actually at copulation and at marrying and even at divorcing and adultery and remarrying. So it's as if they're practicing, as if the human animal needs its childhood to practice at the game of love, which is really the most powerful and important game we play.
Isn't that what Wilhelm Reich was all about? Isn't that why he became such a threat culturally? Was that he decided that if Freud was right and that, you know, repression caused neurosis, that kids should be educated about sex as young as they are able to understand that, and it should be demystified in order for the culture to be less neurotic.
Right. I would agree with them. You can control the human animal. We have a flexible brain, but we've got some basic drives, and the sex drive is one of them. The drive to love is another. The drive to attach is another. Drive for ambition. I mean, there's all kinds of them. But when you, a culture will work better when you accept the human nature and try to understand it and bring it down the kinds of paths so that it's productive as opposed to unproductive.
Mm-hmm. You know, the government, this administration in particular, seems to be, particularly through abstinence-only programs for teenagers, seems to be really trying to redirect sexuality, certainly sexuality among young people, but I guess by inference also sexuality among older people. You talk about the drive to love being so important. They're also looking at dealing with legislatively giving people certain credits for marriage.
Isn't that amazing?
Mm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing is staggering. The narcissism is staggering, and the lack of nuance, lack of understanding that there's an awful lot of people in this country and all over the world who've got their own agendas.
Yeah.
You know, I can't even understand it. I'm more astonished, and I think all of us are, with this election than with anyone. I mean, you know, it boils down to the fact that Americans seem to be more concerned about gays marrying than sending their own children off to Iraq to die.
Yeah,
that's part of that morality issue we referred to earlier.
It's it's a Darwinian thing, I think. I mean, for example, I mean, if you, marriage is the very core of the human animal. This is the way you pass on your genes. And somehow these people find that core is more violated by letting gays marry and halfway across the country than sending their own children off to die.
You know, one of the things in Washington that we do, or the Congress does to us, is expends huge amounts of money on this abstinence-only education. I mean, it's not a little bit of money. It's $800 million that we've already spent on a program that, and Dr.
Does
please correct
work.
Me, does not work.
It does not
and
work.
And, of course, as you pointed out, it actually can make matters worse, because if people don't know that there's anything except intercourse, what do? They engage in the riskiest kind of sexual behavior once they decide that the armband really doesn't mean no sex, or once they decide that abstinence isn't for them anymore. So we dumb down the curriculum of sex education, and we make our own children more vulnerable. Another example
Very
of the
vulnerable.
Danger that we create for our own kids.
And also they laugh at it. We got an email from a woman whose son or daughter was a teenager during, you know, one of these abstinence-only sort of speeches or lectures at his school, and the kids were like, nah, come on. They were just laughed the guy right out of the room.
Sure.
They said it was ridiculous, that it was it made no sense to them. We're going to take calls for either of our guests, for both of our guests. The number is 866-303-2270. We're sitting here with Dr. Helen Fisher, who is the professor of anthropology at Rutgers University and author of the recent book, Why We Love, The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love, and also Barry Lynn is doing with us all morning, the Reverend Barry Lynn, Executive Director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Please give us a call. What's on your mind? It's 42 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Call 866-303-2270. Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
All right, Let's land this thing. It's 47 past the hour. Mark Maron, it's Mark Riley.
Hi, hey, you know, you better teach Passman how to spell Albuquerque.
It's been quite a show. It's we got Reverend Barry Lynn here. He's the director of Americans United for Separation of Church and State. We have Dr. Helen Fisher, who is professor of anthropology at Rutgers and also the author of Why We Love, The Nature of Chemistry and The Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love. We are talking about... I guess we're talking about the repression of people, the intentional repression of people in order to control them, to control their sexuality, to control their views about sexuality. Barry, what's your website?
Website's www.au.org. One of the things, of course, we look at is religiously based censorship, of which there is an enormous amount going on in the Federal Communications Commission, in public schools, and around the country.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. Michael in Orange County, how are you, Michael? What's on your mind?
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
All right.
Just a quick observation on Dr. Fisher's comment about aggression and suppression in this country. It's interesting to note that of the other world leaders, how many of them have been or still are women?
Mm,
that's interesting. There have been quite a few.
There's just as many in the third world countries as there are in the first world countries. I mean, Pakistan, India, the Philippines, etc. And that's because in those countries, it's apparently the family, a particular family, that goes to the top. And if there's a man gets knocked off, then his wife will take it because it's a family issue, not a male-female issue. But it is remarkably few women at the top, top leaders in the world.
Yeah.
They don't start early enough. They're not as aggressive as young women. They're more involved in family as young women. And by middle age, when they do become more interested in politics, it's a little too late for them.
Well, it's interesting. Like, you know, Barry, I think, has got in front of him an example of some of the propaganda that the religious right is putting out to children to stifle their interest in sex. But this particular thing, which we actually read on the air last week, is a fairy tale. You want to read that, Barry?
Yeah, this is your tax dollars at work. $800 million of this junk over the past 5 years. It's a book in a series called Choosing the Best, which I believe was written by a former director of Campus Crusade for Christ in a previous life. But Choosing the Best tells the story of a knight who married a village maiden instead of the princess because the princess offered so many tips on slaying the local dragon. Moral of the story, notes this Choosing the Best textbook, occasional suggestions and assistance may be all right, but too much of it will lessen a man's confidence or even turn him away from his princess. Can you imagine that the federal government is paying for this junk in after-school programs, mainly all over the United States.
That's not a tough fable to deconstruct, is it?
We were talking about deconstructing Shark Tale. That's tough. This is simple, and it's obvious. Isn't it, Doctor, also true that one of the things that happens, if you control women's child-bearing capacities, you restrict it. You guarantee that they're going to be out of the job market and be non-competitive at the very times when those men, weak-willed as we are saying, gee, can we really go into the job force and compete with a woman? If she's not there, we win by default.
Yeah. You know, I don't even feel that women moving into the job market has had any impact at all on men's job abilities. For example,
look at the CEOs of major companies, Fortune 500 companies, a reduced number of women as the head. They're in single digits, I believe.
Oh, they are. Less than 95% of, less than 5% of women are running major companies or in the boardroom. But, you know, it's interesting that these men are so threatened by it because I really see men and women as like 2 feet. They need each other to get ahead. The brains were built, they're different brains. They were built to work together. And those, we now know that those companies that have a large percentage of women in managerial arenas do much better.
But also on an economic level, I mean, it's very hard to get by if you don't have a two-family income.
That's right. As a matter of fact, it is expanding men's roles because now that wives work, they can, more middle-aged men are going back to school, they're retiring earlier. As women's roles are expanding, men's roles are expanding. It's astonishing that these people are hanging on to a paradigm that doesn't work anymore in the 21st century.
But I think it all adds
it's almost like a response, just a fear response to the emotion of society.
Mm. Oh, yeah, and that, these people want to live in fear, and they want to live in this. It's baffling to me just on a basic level that so many of the religious right voted against their economic interests.
Exactly.
Well, they do.
And then on top of that, they don't want the women in their household to work, and they want to have more kids. I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of stress, anxiety, and panic that they are really in, and they just put that dogmatic cap right on that powder keg of panic, and they get all starry-eyed, and they move through life in a completely delusional universe.
No, and it is, and it's terribly dangerous because they're trying to suck us into the same universe. You know, they're trying to say that everybody has to make the same choices they make. I suspect, Doctor, you could make a decision that you would stay, that a woman would stay at home, a man could stay at home, but they don't want you to make choices. They want to tell you what your options are, limited ones, and you fit in or they hurt you.
Let's take a call. Marlene in Miami. How are you, Marlene? Good morning.
Good morning.
Good, thank you.
What's on your mind?
Okay. The question that I propose is, I hope it's not too intellectual, but aren't we sort of facing maybe a division between the established church and Orthodox ideas versus a mystical, authentic experience in people?
Well, that's way too intellectual.
I think it's a great question. Barry, what do you think?
No, I mean, I think that the varieties of religious experience that we have in this country, they used to be more personal. You had some experience, the spiritual, the mystical, that was enough. Now, of course, you not only go beyond that into organized churches, but now you have the mega churches, which literally do have salad bars in them. Uh-huh. I mean, there literally are churches that have that. I mentioned that was absolutely right.
Do they call it like the blue cheesy Jesus dressing?
No, they actually don't. But right. If you went and marketed it to them, they might. So I think there is something to be said for the fact that it is viewed by the religious right, the so-called religious right, as inauthentic religious experience unless you're having it with them, preferably while they're passing the collection plate or asking you for money over the television.
So the time that I moved a chair when I was on acid with my mind doesn't count?
No.
No.
No, Kreskin.
No. You weren't on acid at that time.
Exactly. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, hey. I'm a psychic hotline, too.
Sandra, in my hometown of Albuquerque, New Mexico, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sandra. How you doing?
Just fine. How are y'all?
All right. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to make a comment that, you know, the religious writers saying that, you know, they're so worried about gay marriages and all. And, you know, I've been together with my partner 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what they're so scared about is that we'll show heterosexuals up. There's a lot of gay people that have been together for a number of years. You don't hear about them because a lot of them are afraid to come out and let people know. But, you know, my partner's mother finally accepted us because she realized we've been together more or longer than she'd been together with either one of her husbands.
Oh, great story.
Congratulations.
Anyway,
that's wonderful.
Sandra.
I just want to say that, you know, we have a total misunderstanding I think we've evolved three distinctly different brain systems for mating and reproduction. One is a sex drive, one is romantic love, that obsession of first love, and the third is attachment, that sense of calm and security you can feel with a long-term partner. And gays have inherited exactly those same brain structures.
Sure.
I'm not surprised that they want to marry.
Sure.
Real quickly, is there, when people say that they're okay with gay people as long as they, quote, don't flaunt it, what you hear from, I've heard, I don't know how many times I've heard this foolishness from people. But is it real? I mean, is that how people are actually approaching this?
You know, when you ask in various questionnaires, there's the big questionnaire on sexuality was in 1994. That was the last big one. And a huge number of Americans were opposed to homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I can't answer your question. But women are less opposed to it than men are because men are so more inflexible. They see less of that
nuance.
It's
also threatening.
Yeah.
It just threatens their small world.
It threatens what... For odd reasons, because it really shouldn't threaten their own opportunities to find a mate and reproduce.
Right.
But we flaunt it all the time. I mean, the truth is sexuality is flaunted for all kinds of purposes, including commercial purposes. I mean, what is Overstock.com doing with that big O ad that they run on television all the time? You're not supposed to think it's Overstock when you first start watching this woman sitting in a revealing costume.
Okay. Barry Lynn, thank you for joining us all morning.
Thank you, Helen Fisher. It was great talking to you.
The book, Dr. Helen Fisher, Why We Love the Nature and Chemistry of Romantic Love, go to morningsedition.com. You can get that. And Barry, your website quickly.
AU.org. www.au.org.
There you go. There's the liberal agenda for today. Write these down. Here we go. Send Barry Bonds and Jason Giambi information about herbal alternatives that can also shrink your testicles. Two, if this medical marijuana thing flies, start pushing for medical ecstasy. Imagine the suffering we could relieve with that. Three, protest movie The Incredibles as damaging to children with low self-esteem. Suggest name change to The Nicely Adequates. Four, since the publication of his memoirs and his appearance on 60 Minutes last night, criticize Bob Dylan for being a media whore. And five, today's phrase is dropping into conversation. You know why Rumsfeld's saying, don't you? Because Bush's cabinet is dangerously close to hitting the white guy minimum. Wake up, man! Can't you see it? Thanks again, you guys.
All right, thanks a lot, you guys. We'll see you tomorrow here on Morning Edition, Air America Radio.